Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the last week of August 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey, Elise.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And reporter Reeve Hamilton, who's sitting in for Ben.
Hey.
Today we're talking about the state of the governor's race and the Coward ad now running in 20 newspapers across the state, donor appointees for both Perry and White, and the state of legislative races. So we have a packed program for you. I guess I'll go first. The latest Rasmussen poll out basically shows no change, an 8-point lead for Rick Perry over Bill White. No change from the last Rasmussen poll, I should say.
I think they're each up by 1 point, right? So it's still an 8-point lead.
Right. And so I guess all this back and forth that we've been talking about, the BTEC stuff, the chicken suit, nothing has really shifted the state of this race.
The debate. I mean, all the stuff.
Something you
got to
ask about any summertime poll, just sort of as a general throwdown, is: was anybody paying attention? Everybody's gone to Disney World. It's 104 degrees outside. I'm not paying attention to politics. I'm trying to buy binders for these kids and get them back into school. It hasn't started yet.
Right.
And so, you know, so take this as the number. It's about 8 or 9 points. And then when the polls start coming out in after some ads start running and everything, you know, mid to late September, then you'll see what actually is happening with the race when people are actually paying attention.
If you believe the theory, right, that Labor Day is the official kickoff to the campaign and nobody's paying attention beforehand, then none of these polls matter, of course, except for the UT Texas Tribune polls, which were exactly correct.
These polls may be right, but I don't think that they reflect the judgment of an electorate that's looked at anything.
I think the two interesting things, Elise, and I'd ask everybody to weigh in on this, that we should be talking about on this, are one, you know, yet another poll of which Rick Perry, who has been governor for 10 years and is known to every single person in this state, and therefore there is no undecided opinion about him, Rick Perry still cannot get to 50% in the poll. So that's an interesting thing just to contemplate, impactful or not. Second thing is, if you believe the theory that the Rasmussen operation leans a little bit to the right and you have to discount a little bit for that, then maybe it's good news for Bill White that the lead is only in single digits and that maybe it's in fact a point or two less and maybe it's actually closer to the margin of error and maybe and maybe and maybe. Fact is, as you say, needle hadn't moved.
Right. We talked about this sub 50% phenomenon during the primary and after those undecideds were taken out. So right now in this 49-41 poll, there's what, 7% undecideds? We know that you can't vote undecided at the poll. So assuming that undecideds tend to be independent, but independents that swing right, that would easily put Perry over the 50%.
I just want to ask any of the undecided people at this point, what are you waiting for? I mean, this really is not a race in which, I mean, are they waiting to see if they're kind of not happy with Perry and so they're kind of still kicking the tires on White? Nobody can be undecided about Perry at this
point. Kind of, what are you having for dinner next week? Well, it's not next week yet. I don't know what I'm hungry for.
Yeah,
I usually eat steak, but, you know, I'm open. I think there's a lot of that. I think people tend to gel. They tend to gel in their political opinions in the last 2 weeks. Even people who are decided, you know, I'm voting for my person. You see votes swing and go crazy in the last couple of weeks.
This is not a choice between steak and chicken. This is a choice between steak and screws, or, you know, steak and sheet metal. The difference between these two is significant enough that it's not as if they're looking ahead to next week to decide between, you know, beef or pork. It's between beef and gravel.
I guess both campaigns are going, which one of us is going
with
Reeve, screws right
explain
now?
Explain that, Reeve.
Well, I just didn't know that the opposite of chicken was sheet metal. I'm learning something on this Tribcast.
For a change. Stick around, kid.
Maybe they're waiting for a debate.
Well, that's, you know, right. I mean, we're going to have this interesting thing where what's the place where voters, that actually brings up a good point, whether it's a debate or something else.
What's the inflection point?
Where do voters get to see a contrast between the two things that they're being asked to buy? I mean, when do you see, okay, here's product one, here's product two, this one, you know, and this one, and you compare them and you kind of look at them. I mean, other than just reading about stuff, which is, you know, we certainly laud that and, you know, we'll supply whatever you need to read. But, I mean, when you're a voter and you're actually looking for information on these guys and you're trying to contrast them and see them under similar circumstances, that's going to be kind of an interesting problem this year.
And it forces us to consider what exactly is it about not wanting to debate on the Perry side, you know, that has got them doing what they're doing. You know, they say it's the taxes, tax returns, White hasn't released tax returns, we're fine with that. There's an assumption that there's a reluctance or an unwillingness on the part of the Perry folks to put him out there. Not, I mean, this whole coward ad, which we're going to talk about in a second. I don't believe that the issue is that Perry is a coward. I just believe that, you know, like a football team ahead in the fourth quarter, Perry wants to run out the clock.
It's a smart political play.
It's a smart political decision. But the point is, if there were a debate, and if you put the contrast out there, I mean, the question is, does it necessarily hurt Perry for the contrast to be struck more directly? I mean, that's...
I don't think so. I guess if I could play contrarian here for a minute, what's so precious about a debate? I mean, if you're a regular average voter that held these things on Friday nights, I don't watch that stuff. I'm at the high school football game. I rarely catch up with it. It might produce a short news story for the next morning where this guy said that, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what's the magic of a debate? What is it, you know, that...
Well, the magic is that it's a part of democracy that if you want to be rehired or hired for a job that involves your spending my tax dollars and representing me and my voice at this capital or that capital, you should be forced to come before me and ask for my vote.
But do I have to do it with the other job applicant sitting next to me? Can't I just talk to you? I mean, that's really the issue here. Perry's sort of making him. I mean, his argument is, you know, I'm making myself available. I'm just not sitting on the stage next to that other guy.
Is he making himself available?
Generally,
he's making himself. I will say this: he's making himself available, not using the media as his vehicle for availability.
Right.
There's nothing to filter the message. Right. It's so much easier now.
He's going directly to voters.
Although they're traveling, letting reporters travel with him. They're doing those things.
Well, in fact, you're about to travel with him.
Right.
That's true. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this Back to Basics ad, Back to Basics group, which is funded by trial lawyer Steve Mostyn out of Houston, is running 24 full-page ads in newspapers across the state with Rick Perry and the headline "Coward." On the bottom, it says something like, "What face Texans or something?" Stop.
Right. Well, they're going sort of right at this issue, taking drawing their own conclusions that, you know, he's sort of running away from this opportunity to debate Bill White. They're alleging that he's scared, and so they put this big ad. They called it a "Coward."
I'm just glad that the headline wasn't crap.
Right.
I might have felt bad about that.
Right. So, I mean, I think the question is, the Houston Chronicle refused to run it. An editorial writer for the Dallas Morning News blogged about it and said, you know, maybe by running this, we're not putting our best foot forward. It's a little bit, I mean, it's sort of strongly worded. Now, the Back to Basics people are not the White campaign, and they've been much stronger in attacking Perry than the White campaign has. At the same time, their message is essentially the same. You know, Bill White just...
Although White did... Am I correct in remembering that in the last little while I read White distancing himself a little bit from the presentation of the ad? White
He said, I wouldn't use that kind of language.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But ultimately, they're both saying, we want a debate.
And White's the beneficiary of these...
Yeah, so I mean, how much... Right. How should we think of these third-party ads, and how far is too far for them to go?
This reminded me of the General Betray Us ad that the Move On people put on. I would not have run this ad. I'll say it right here. I would not have accepted that ad.
As a publication?
As a publication. Okay, right. I would not have accepted it because I think, where is the line? Right? Where is the line? Do you draw a line? Do you think that this is an acceptable or an unacceptable form of communication? And I think it should be the publication's right, quite frankly, to decide, you know, this is something that I think is wrong. And I would have been personally uncomfortable taking it, and had it been offered to the Tribune, I would have declined.
Well, this could totally backfire. I mean, voters could see it and then decide for themselves, this is totally wrong, you know?
Well, and sometimes these third-party things, I mean, you know, they get conflated with the party that they're trying to support. So, I mean, the Perry campaign has, as you would expect, as any of us would do in the same situation, tried to say, you know, White and Back to Basics are basically one and the same thing. The problem with third parties is the people who were kind of with Move On found out is, you know, if you're with somebody and they do something really, really, really unattractive to voters, now you're stuck with it. And you know, these kinds of things can backfire on your own candidate. If you're over at Back to Basics and you go too far and it backfires on White, you just undermine your own guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure that this... I mean, the other Back to Basics ads, which have been tough ads that they've done, but they've primarily been
the
TV
other three
ads,
have been on
right?
television.
Yeah, and they haven't been sort of so direct. You know, one was just complaining about the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Right, and they've been more issue-focused. They haven't been personal. And that's, to me, there's a difference between this presentation and the presentation that they did previously. And frankly, if they wanted to do an ad on this issue of Perry is unwilling to debate, there are a lot of ways they could have done it. I mean, Jerry Patterson complained today about the ad on behalf of Republicans, saying Rick Perry is a veteran. No veteran should be called a coward. I just think that's wrong. That's the same thing as people complaining, Ross, that you're examining Brian Birdwell's residency questions is wrong because he's a war hero.
Right.
The fact that you're a war hero does not exempt you from obeying the law. Now, Birdwell may or may not have obeyed the law in this case. We don't know. But that's why we looked into that question.
Right.
And I reject the argument, I'm sorry, that somehow the fact that Rick Perry is a veteran inoculates him from a serious attack on whether or not he is debating Bill White. However, I think that the presentation of this ad, personally, was a little extreme.
Well, when you're using language like that, is it a serious attack, or is it just sort of
Or is it in fact not a serious attack?
Well, if they had run exactly the same ad and changed the word coward to chicken.
Which is the word they're fond of.
I frankly think chicken would have been interesting. Now, the Houston Chronicle didn't tell you. You asked the Chronicle, what headline would you have been comfortable with, right?
Didn't they talk about alternate wording?
They didn't say which specifically what they suggested, but they did suggest some alternate words. And Back to Basics said, well, look, 24 other papers are taking this one, so it's either this one or you can take your full page ad money. And
I wonder if other newspapers had this debate internally, right? If they did, or if they just think, I mean, they're hearing me say, I'm the Tribune, I wouldn't have taken it. They're thinking, you're out of your mind.
I've worked at newspapers, or if they were sitting in the newsroom the next morning and saying, did anybody know the ad department was taking this? I think there was probably some of that.
Well, if reporters maybe had that reaction,
well,
right?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, look, you know, politics ain't beanbag, oldest cliche in the world, right? So this is tough stuff, and if you're in politics, it's going to be tough stuff. But, you know, if this is a preview of what all the money that both of these candidates have, if this is a preview of what it's going to be for the next 3 months, this does have the potential to be pretty ugly. Now, you remember Tony Sanchez being linked to Manuel Noriega.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Right. It's not as if previous campaigns have been
Enrique Tea Camarena,
parties,
right?
Right. But this could be an ugly deal.
Yeah, so if it doesn't even get started till Labor Day, and this is pre-Labor Day,
well,
what's
I think some of this
then?
Is starting right away, and I think, you know, you're pretty quickly going to see, you know, Bill Flores has an ad up in the congressional race in Waco and Brian already. I think you're going to see the gubernatorial campaigns before Labor Day, and I think you're going to see them all the way up. And I think this is going to be a $60 to $80 million governor's race, and you're going to see most of it on TV and in the mailbox.
And I think the interesting thing that you just brought up about the Flores race, and I would say the same thing about the Canseco-Rodriguez race, is you've got very high-profile races not at the very top of the ticket in which the national parties have significant interest.
Right. Well, they are at the top of the ticket.
Well, but I mean not at the top of the ticket in the sense that ordinarily it's the governor's race where you get this kind of—
The big draw,
The heavyweight fight is the governor's race, and the other people are in the undercard.
Right.
You know, both Flores and Rodriguez are apparently leading in internal polls right now in their races. And in fact, the Flores Chet Edwards race has been moved from toss-up to toss-up Republican by Stuart Rothenberg as of today.
Right.
So you're going to see a lot of this kind of high-level attack to a degree that maybe we don't see on the undercard that much.
Right.
Well, Evan, let's switch back real quick to the candidates when they were office holders and how much they got from the people they eventually appointed to either city commissions or state.
Right. I'm going to be in the odd position of walking back a little bit from a story that we as an organization have happily reported on and by doing so probably promoted a little bit, which is this question of donor appointees. It's been a big issue during the campaign so far. It goes back, frankly, to the primary when Hutchison accused Perry's folks of cronyism, right? That was her big argument. One of her big arguments against Perry was he's been governor for 10 years. He's appointed every significant statewide elected appointed person. Mm-hmm. This is a bad thing. And, of course, the reaction at the time that I had was, so are you saying, Senator Hutchison, that you would only appoint your political enemies as governor?
All
I mean,
right.
This is the oldest thing in the world. You appoint people who are close to you, around you, and sometimes those people are inadvertently donors or sometimes they're very deliberately donors. So we examined Bill White's campaign. Matt Stiles did. You've heard of him, Matt Stiles.
I think so.
Yeah. We had Matt examine.
Matt who Stiles now,
Stiles,
actually.
Right. We had Matt examine the list of people who donated to the White mayoralty, essentially the mayor's campaigns.
Right.
And well, lo and behold,
nearly $2 million.
Nearly $2 million. And we then, as an outgrowth of that, quite frankly, had a conversation about which category of Perry appointee was likely to be the highest, sort of the highest donor levels, and said, well, probably regions. And in fact, indeed,
right,
the regions have accounted for a significant, almost $6 million in donations over the years. That's 91 of 171. Regions appointed by Perry over the last 10 years.
Right, turned out to be about 7% of his total campaign contributions right. over the years.
Yeah.
So,
but the question is, does it matter? Should we be surprised? And
no.
Does it necessarily Does it necessarily say something bad? I thought Bob Rowling, the former UT regent today on our site, Brian Tevenot interviewed him yesterday, was a really interesting commenter on this thing. You know, I already had good football tickets. I didn't exactly need
this. I'm a billionaire.
This.
Didn't need this. It's a lot of work.
And not only did he not need it, he did not enjoy it.
No. It only matters to the extent that people who might be more qualified are
right.
not getting appointed because these people who are political friends are getting these spots. So if there is kind of a competition between somebody who really could do the job and somebody who's given a lot of money, and only the people who give a lot of money end up
right.
getting the positions, then yeah, that's a question.
Right. So in this case, 80 people who were appointed by the governor to various boards of regents around the state over the last 10 years have not given him anything. And you could say, well, those 80 people clearly were appointed because they were qualified. You could also say that some of those 80 were probably appointed because they filled out certain...
They were minorities or whatever. Yeah.
Or they might have been connected
because they helped
in non-monetary ways.
They helped in non-financial ways.
Right.
They were, you know... you know, this is one of those things. I mean, you sort of got to it at the beginning. I mean, when you say, okay, so you're going to appoint your enemies to this? You're going to appoint your friends. Where it's cronyism and where it's a problem, as Elise says, is when the resume doesn't fit the job. You know, when you've got Billy Carter's brother at the, you know, chairmanship of, you know, some major university, clearly you've got a problem.
And what was Michael Brown's job before he went to FEMA, you know?
Right.
Well, you talked to a lawyer in Houston. Who is it? David?
Kelly Frells?
No, David Beck?
Right, yeah, it was David Beck, right.
For the White story, who was appointed to the Parks Commission, is that correct?
And he had a really interesting take. It was really sort of funny. You know, you sort of asked somebody, well, you know, this is an influence thing, right? And he said, well, yeah, kind of. You know, I know him, I contributed to him, I believe in him, I did this stuff. You know, you're going to go to your friends, that's how it works, hello.
And does the fact that he appointed me make me more likely to want to give him money?
Well, and in some ways, you know, he and Rowling both said from opposite sides of the political spectrum something of the same thing, which is they're not going to appoint somebody they think is going to screw this up. And
although they occasionally do.
Although they occasionally do. But, you know, the risk to an appointer is that you, A, appoint somebody to a job that looks political, and B, they're bad at it. Michael Brown's a great example, the former FEMA head that Bush appointed.
But you know what? In the diplomatic corps, this has always been a conversation, right?
Right? Well,
you know that how many ambassadors end up being people who had been big donors or big bundlers previously.
Right, right.
But you don't send those people who are big donors or big bundlers into Afghanistan or Iraq. You send them to Canada, Australia, you know, places that are more.
Right.
So
I gave you $100,000 and you send the
small donors
right.
to Afghanistan or
ambassador
Iraq.
To St. Kitts,
that's
you
right.
know.
That's right.
So basically there's a difference between paying to play and paying because you're playing already. Right?
I actually have a hard time looking anybody in the face and saying, this is an example of pay-to-play Perry, which some of the people, in fact, the White campaign took the story yesterday and they said, well, this is an example of how Perry is all about pay-to-play. You know, if Bill White is prepared to say right now, I will never appoint a donor to a board of regents or any board or commission if I'm governor, I would be interested to hear him say that.
So now this is your weekly call for Katie Bacon.
Well, with our last few minutes, Ross, you wanted to just kind of do a state of the hot legislative races this fall?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, the thing that sort of sticks out on the map right now is that redistricting 10 years ago was really, really well done. There is not a single race left in the Texas Senate. Everybody who's on the ballot, all 16 of them, is going to get elected. The incumbents,
unless Wentworth suddenly has to resign.
Jason Embry reported this morning that the A&M job may be disappearing.
Right, and you know, and even if Wentworth leaves, that's a Republican seat.
Right.
Redistricting determined those seats. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Out of 32 congressional seats, two are in contest. The two you talked about, Edwards and Rodriguez, and in the Texas House, as you know, Elise, you've been digging into this. In the Texas House, liberally speaking, there are 20 seats that are contested.
But it's really like 13.
Right. It's really, you know, and it'll change a little bit before October. So it's funny how much the maps determine this stuff.
And the ones that are contested are ones in which possibly as a result of factors unrelated to those districts, the party that had not held the seat snatched the
defeat
seat
from
briefly.
The dozen, right.
And it is entirely conceivable that it will just swing back to where it was before, except in the cases where there are ethical issues that maybe made races more competitive that were not competitive previously.
That's right. The big theme this year is the Obama backlash replacing the Obama tsunami or wave or whatever that helped sweep all these people into office in a lot of suburban areas, the T-Boats, the Carroll Kents, the Maldonados.
Right.
Those districts that were really drawn for Republicans and long held by Republicans, people like Tony Goolsbee, for example, Mike Crucey, those will likely swing back if just the math governs the race, right? But if there's candidate factors that change it.
Right. Yeah, the theory here is that if you're a freshman Democrat in a previously Republican district, Obama got you into office, and now we're going to knock you off. And this will be a test of that theory.
Yeah, and you know, the control of the House, I mean, this is where the whole thing about the control of the House being in question or not. I mean, we really don't know whether what the outcome of this is going to be, but you can look at these handful of races and say that it's going to determine what the control of the House is, right? These races that you're isolating out, the 13 or the 20, mm-hmm. will be the ones that ultimately decide what happens.
If the Democrats take the Texas House, it's going to be like the U.S. beating USSR in hockey. I mean, it's going to be one of those. It's completely unexpected. It's just
they would have to hold and then gain another three.
Right. It would be quite a night for the Democrats.
Of course, I will note that last night in Alaska and Florida, there were two things that nobody. They would have put Murkowski losing and McCollum losing based on the last polls in that US-USSR category. So maybe anything's possible.
And all politics is local, so who knows which local factors will end up coming into play. Mm. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and be back here next week. For now, on behalf of Evan, Ross, and Reeve, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.